This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:07 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Hezril and Kelvin. We're going to now move over to bipartisan coordination, especially when it comes to delivering welfare and aid. This comes as Rina Harun, the Minister of Women, Family and Community Development, had denied allegations from opposition MPs that there was political interference to aid distribution during the MCO. So essentially they're saying that their constituencies saw a delay or didn't even receive the government's food hampers.
Yep, for example, Pematang Power MP Nurul Isa Anwar said the aid distribution in her constituency suddenly stopped after a letter from Bersatu's Nibong Tebal MP Datuk Mansor Othman, which had apparently asked for food aid to be carried out by select representatives instead. YP Isa asked the minister to ensure that the welfare department only receives directives from her ministry and not from unrelated politicians.
Right, so Dato' Sri Rina gave several reasons for this. She said that the job of aid distribution was given not just to the welfare department, but also to coordinators from the Pariketa National Pact. She went on to argue that MPs aren't the only local community leaders and that food baskets were sent to other figures instead. And she says that this is because it was a quicker way to distribute the aid.
Yeah, but she also admits that there may have been logistical and administrative issues. She said the food aid requests were based on parliamentary constituencies and not MPs. And the surge in aid requests overwhelmed the limited capacity of the welfare department.
So I'm just curious what the the chain of command is when it does come to distributing aid. Like, does it solely fall within the welfare department? Or, I'm wondering if the MPs at least should have been contacted and notified about this, since they're certainly involved. We've seen a lot of MPs like YB Maria Chin, involved in the COVID-19 efforts. But on another note, I'm just wondering, what is it when it comes to giving aid and whether there's something to be said about taking credit for doing things? I'm just wondering how all these arguments fit into our notion of bipartisanship and our level of maturity when it comes to working together in times like this.
I don't know if it's really about maturity. To your point of taking credit, it could really be just about, well, in your darkest moments, remember that I was here. And by doing that, it could likely mean, well, my face was imprinted on the food hamper, so you'll have to remember that I helped you out. And so, not this MP that, sure, you voted for, but isn't in government.
Yeah, that's actually one. I've almost forgotten about that, how there seems to be a lot of political branding, doesn't it, when it comes to aid? When you look at the minister's face printed, their names are printed, and there's this sort of like, don't forget us, right? And the fact that we helped you. But on another note, though, what is it about taking credit? Because in other countries, bipartisanship seems to be the opposite of what it is here in Malaysia. And when I say that, I mean bipartisanship can actually be seen as good PR for a lot of politicians in countries like the States or the UK, especially when it comes to crises, because you're seen to take the high road and take the moral high ground to reach out to your opponents and work together for the sake of the people. So it's like, why isn't that happening here? I'm just not understanding that point.
Maybe it's the context of it. Maybe it's around the time when Perikatan took over power, the pandemic was really also taking off at the same time, right? Perhaps what they were trying to do is that, some voters, of our constituents may feel that we have come into power in a bit of an unsavory manner. So to fix that, I'm going to give you aid specifically through specific Perikatan national members that I have chosen who want to appear better. And, if by any chance there was a snap poll, remember, I was here, I helped you out, not the MP, not the MP, the opposition MP that was there. But it's really, I think, also coming from a place that was that has been a legacy that we can't seem to shake off, right? Mm. That aid to MPs really depends on you being in the government. We, during Barisan's time back then, no allocation was given to opposition MPs at all. Pakatan, when they came to power, they did a little bit better in 2018. Opposition service centers were given about 100,000 ringgit, whereas if you were with government, you were given 500,000 ringgit. I wish they didn't do that because you are not punishing the MP. Hmm. You're punishing the rakyat. You're punishing the people who are there who might need the aid the most who are there. There is no good reason for you to go to a service center unless you really need it and you can't find ways to solve your problems.
Yeah, and to that, I wonder if there's also if there's an indirect, you know, punishment of punishing voters, right, for not voting for you. It's a lot of things going on, but you can let us know your thoughts. Keep them coming through. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to cross over to Dr. Oi Sun, Senior Fellow of the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, for his take on this whole debacle and where bipartisanship is headed here in Malaysia. In the meantime, stay tuned for that. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:15 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Hezril and Kelvin. And we're talking about bipartisanship, the need for MPs across political divides to come together and work together, especially in times of crisis. This comes as Dato' Sri Rina Harun, the Minister of Women, Family and Community Development, was alleged to have excluded opposition MPs when it came to distributing aid like food baskets in certain constituencies. So to get some insights on that, we're crossing over to Dr. Oi Sun, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Oi Sun, thanks for joining us.
Oh, hi. Nice talking to all of you.
So what's your take on the lack of bipartisan coordination during the MCO?
Well, I think this is not a uniquely Malaysian phenomenon. Granted, as I listened to your discussion just now, there are many countries, especially European ones, European continental ones, as well as the United Kingdom, where you see a degree of bipartisanship, people coming together, parties coming together to try to deal with this COVID-19 pandemic. But on the other hand, you also see what is happening in the United States, whereby the Trump administration and individual state governments, namely those state governments which are perhaps not belonging to the Republican Party, but for example, the governors are from the Democratic Party, they are also in loggerheads with the Trump administration, right, over distribution of resources and so on. So in this country, as we are transitioning from previously essentially a one-party ruling state into one whereby, you know, you have a rotation in a sense of governments and so on, this sense and sensibility for bipartisanship is perhaps a little bit wanting, even though we are facing such a huge pandemic. Yeah.
Would you say that our political culture is somewhat averse to bipartisanship?
We have a very nuanced and unique political culture. On the one hand, you do see this sort of confrontational stance between the government and the opposition. Sometimes you see a lot of very heated arguments in parliament and so on. And then, as you pointed out, over this distribution of pandemic fighting resources and so on. But then, very strangely speaking, when it comes to, for example, more sensitive and yet more, shall we say, amorphous issues such as race and religion and so on, suddenly you would see those politicians who were supposed to be political rivals all coming together. And that was what happened, for example, over the change of government a few months ago. So I think politicians conveniently pick and choose the kind of issues around which they want to rally together with their erstwhile political rivals. Yeah.
But why is this the case, or rather, when did this come about? Because I think a lot of Malaysians, or older Malaysians at least, have this nostalgic notion that politicians, just after independence, were quote unquote gentlemanly and worked with each other and sort of saw the spirit of saw the benefits of bipartisanship. So where did all of this stem from?
Well, in the early days of independence, you still have all these remnants of those the colonial heritage. With Tengku and so on, they were all educated in England and they play politics, as you say, in a very gentleman's manner. As time progresses, on the one hand, you have this one-party sort of ruling the government for more than half a century. There were, of course, resentments towards that. And even from the government side, they felt that the opposition was a constant nuisance. Thereby, this sort of very confrontational stance somehow developed between the two sides. So now it's very difficult to reconcile them. Unless, of course, at some point, this sort of change of government really becomes very commonplace. And, we know that sometimes you'll be government, sometimes you'll be in the opposition. Then perhaps the situation could be slightly better.
Aside from that historical bipartisan vote for Undi 18, have we ever seen a political bipartisanship at play in Malaysia?
Well, this lowering of the voting age came to be because both sides were confident, at least one side is erroneously so, like we don't know which side, that it could be more beneficial to their political future. The Pakatan side would feel that, well, they thought that they were voted in mainly by the younger voters. And similarly, the UMNO and PAS side, they felt that it would benefit them more because a lot of these younger generations, they felt that have been, to put it bluntly, brainwashed by them. So, so both sides felt there's a need for that. So there's a consensus. In this case, in the pandemic fighting case, I think both sides felt that respectively they could score, I think as we mentioned, brownie points if they were seen to be more sympathetic to the people's plight and so on. Yeah.
Right. And how important is bipartisanship for good governance looking past moments of crises?
Well, of course, you saw that the most famous example would be during the Second World War, whereby Winston Churchill led a bipartisan national unity or coalition government with both sides of the political divide being members of his wartime cabinet. And of course, they successfully defeated Nazi Germany, right? So that in a moment of grave national crisis, you see the British people, British political divides coming together. In this country, you would think that this pandemic would be such a moment. But apparently, some politicians did not quite see it that way here.
What would bipartisanship here signal for Malaysia's democracy?
Well, it would, of course, signal, I'm tempted to say it would, of course, signal a degree of maturity, right, for our political development, whereby we really have this sort of a constant change of government from one side to the other and so on. But then I look at the U.S. Recently, and I'm somewhat muted in those comments because, well, they are supposed to be the most mature democracy, right? Yet you see this sort of disputes over distribution of resources and so on, and quite loudly so. So I would think now around the world, as people get more polarized in their politics as well as ideology, I think it is rather difficult to reach at bipartisanship. And again, it's not only Malaysia, but even in the United States. Yeah.
Conversely, are there instances where it would be in the country's best interest for politicians to stick to partisan lines?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to, for example, what would be the best solution on a number of public welfare issues, for example, how best to address, in this case, a public health crisis, how best to address our poverty issue and so on. I'm sure both sides of the political divide, they will have their solutions, I mean, their respective solutions. And of course, they would like their side of the solutions to be implemented instead of the other sets of solutions so that, again, they could win political brownie points and thereby either becoming the government or prolonging their government. Yeah.
You know, I really want to be very optimistic and say that political cooperation would be possible here, but not so with how polarized things are. Where do you stand with this? Do you think we can ever get to a place where we will see better political cooperation?
I don't think in the near future. Frankly, it is very strange, actually, for me. I mean, as a Malaysian, but as somebody who has good fortune of going around the world and look at how other countries work and so on. For example, when we have some external challenges, when we have some sort of global issues which impinge upon us and so on, we don't seem to pay a lot of attention. For example, the South China Sea controversy, it doesn't seem like we pay a lot of attention. But then when there are other countries, other people's plight, we seem to pay a lot of attention. So I don't know. I mean, what is the problem with the people and the society in this country? Perhaps it's time that we should pay more attention to what really concerns us and thereby trying to reach across the political divide here.
Right. And on that note, how do you think stronger political cooperation could be fostered practically?
Well, I think we tend to have this mentality that if you are not a government, you know, you should be like totally banished and marginalized and so on. And that came about because, as I said, we had more than half a century of essentially one-party rule, right? So as time goes on, as this sort of change or changes of government become more commonplace, I think, because the government of the day, they will feel like, oh, maybe a few years down the line, we would be the opposition as well. So might as well give the opposition more benefits so that when we do become opposition, we will similarly enjoy those benefits. Everything has to be, I mean, you have to look at your self-interest, right? So as we have more frequent changes of government in the future, I think we would indeed cultivate a more equitable distribution of political resources and thereby the relationship between the two sides of the political divide hopefully could improve a bit. Yeah.
Ihsan, thanks so much for that analysis.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Oh Ihsan, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. On another note,
we're still talking about politics.
Speaking of politics, we've got a very interesting interview tomorrow.
Yeah, we're just going to plug this one because it's quite a big interview. We're going to be speaking with Datuk Seri Shafi Abdal, President of Warisan and Acting Chief Minister of Sabah. He'll be having that conversation with Khoo Soo Chuang. They'll be discussing the upcoming state elections, the future of Pakatan Harapan, and if Datuk Seri Shafi is the right man to be the next Prime Minister. That's happening tomorrow at 8 a.m. If you can't catch it at 8 a.m., if it's too early for you, don't worry. We'll have the podcast up soon after.
That's right. So make sure you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we're going to head to some messages and then the 7:30 news. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.